This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show, episode number 884. This is Jason Hartman. Thank you so much for joining me today. We always appreciate you tuning in. And I know our show is eclectic. Eclectic, what does that mean? Well, of course, it means it involves all sorts of different things. You know, we talk about deep real estate investing topics. We talk about the overall broad economy, the general business climate. We talk about things to enhance your personal life success, especially on every 10th episode, the shows that end in zero, the 10th episode shows. But today we are going to have a returning guest, actually a returning guest from my Jet Setter podcast, which some of you may have listened to. That is Nick Giambruno. We're going to talk a little bit about the pension crisis. And what does that pension crisis mean for real estate investors? Well, as I have long said, I think that we are going to see significant problems around the country and, of course, around the world. I mean, those are already unfolding, especially in Europe. Europe, which is sadly over, as I say. Europe is over. Yes, I know. That's a crazy thing to say. I don't mean it's really over. Of course, it's hyperbole, obviously. But I was born in Europe, and it is so sad to see what is going on there. These terrorist attacks, the suicide of basically a continent through bad immigration policies and bad socialistic policies, and insane amount of truth denial through political correctness. But be that as it were, we also have this to a lesser degree in the good old US of A. We have it around the world. It's a global phenomenon. This is only a game of relativity, a game of comparison, a game of a race to the bottom in a way. And as much as I say it's an amazing time to be alive, and it is, I still mean that, there are all these contradictions that take place in society, right? There are amazing things happening, and at the same time, there are apocalyptic things happening. It is a very, very interesting thing that old Chinese saying, may you live in interesting times. Well, I think this would definitely qualify with everything that's going on around the world politically and the divisiveness. It's just mind-boggling. It really, really is. And I had an interesting discussion. I think that'll be our next 10th episode show with a very well-known famous author who we have coming up. And I think we might play that as episode 990 about the way people have become so divided around the world because all of the targeting that really started, I believe, with the company called DoubleClick many years ago, all of the ad targeting and content targeting, everybody is just becoming more like themselves. And that is a phenomenon that I don't think has ever really existed in history to the way it is today. You know, I'll give you an example. I got trolled. Yes, I have trolls, and you know what a troll is, I'm sure. One of these disgusting, evil people, frankly, that goes on the internet, on social media, and they start heckling you and trolling you, and they have a complete lack of ability to think critically. And I would say that's one of the scariest things we see on social media nowadays. An entire generation of people, more than a generation, really, because it really spans all ages, but I would certainly say it applies most deeply and most sadly to the millennial generation. Their just complete lack of ability to think critically. It's just mind-boggling. You cannot have a discussion. You cannot have a debate. It's simply devolves into personal attacks. We saw this, you know, of course, with George Bush. It's, eight years after Bush was out of office, we saw people saying, well, it's all George Bush's fault. I guess it still is, but now you got the new devil, Donald Trump. And certainly people on the other side of the spectrum blame Obama for all kinds of things. And, you know, there's no shortage of bad behavior on both sides of the political spectrum. But the thing that is most disconcerting is the lack of ability to think critically, to actually have a debate on something where it involves thinking beyond the headline, beyond the clickbait, beyond the selfish idea that one person has about themselves and what's best for them, rather than what's best for society and the world at large. This is the worldview we live in, folks, and it's probably only going to get worse. And my theory about this is that it's because we are all becoming more like ourselves. And what I mean by that is that all of our media is so fragmented and so targeted, and in some ways this is a great thing. All of our shopping experiences, all of our content, belief systems are so targeted to our thinking. Our whole news feeds are full of people that agree with us, right? And that is a dangerous thing. You know, we've certainly seen that in communist countries, you know, people following orders of Chairman Mao, of Adolf Hitler, of Joseph Stalin. Joseph Stalin, probably the most evil person to ever live in the history of the human race, killed tens of millions of people. You know, hey, communism, how's that working? And look at the new self-declared dictator of Venezuela now. I mean, it's just mind-boggling. And hordes of people around the world following orders of these dictators, just believing in their thing, that they're doing the right thing without ever questioning it. It's amazing. Some do, of course. You know, North Korea, another great example, communism, the biggest disaster that has ever befallen humanity. Communism, big government, that's it. So I want to talk about bubbles for a moment before we get to our guest today. Had an interesting discussion on social media where one of our listeners sent me an article about a house in Silicon Valley area that sold for, gosh, what did it sell for? Like $782,000 above list price or something like that. Now, folks, if that is not the sign of a bubble, I don't know what is. And, you know, if it was a $25 million house or even a $10 million house and it sold for that much above list price, I wouldn't be so amazed or concerned. But this above list price was only about, it was a whopping maybe 30% of the original price. That's how much it sold for above list. So that is certainly a sign that we are way, way past the bubble territory. However, here's the hugely different factor from the old days, from the last go-round, from the Great Recession. And there are many of them. But the biggest one nowadays is the lending standards. I gotta say, I'll give the banks some credit and some lack of credit. They've just been a lot more conservative this time around, and a lot more legit in their lending practices. So the lending has not gotten very far out of hand. Of course, there are some signs that it gets a little bit out of hand, gets a little bit frothy, but it's not nuts. It's not as crazy as it was in 2003, 2004, 2005. And folks, I had a front row seat for that. I owned a traditional real estate company in Irvine, California, and we had an office in Newport Beach, California as well. I also owned a mortgage company. I had a couple different mortgage companies. And I remember I had with this one mortgage rep working for me who was just essentially a crook. I mean, I just don't know of any better way to say it. Of course, that's a little hyperbole because, you know, did he actually break any laws or do any criminal things? Well, I'm not really addressing that, but I am saying that, and I got rid of this guy after I, you know, knew what he was doing because I thought this is a ton of liability. But it was so commonplace in the mortgage business back then that, you know, everybody was doing it. It's kind of like your teenage kid says to you when they get caught doing whatever they shouldn't be doing. Well, mom and dad, everybody's doing it. Now, of course, you know, that's not an excuse, but it does make it a little bit more okay, because this is the problem with laws. When they're not enforced, or they're enforced selectively by the government, then we get into this problem where if you want to compete, you've got to level the playing field. And you got to, you know, when the speed limit, when it says 65 miles an hour, the whole world knows everybody's going to go 75 or maybe 80. And they know that. And they figure, well, you know, that's not too dangerous. But if they were to put the speed limit up to 75 or 80, then everybody would go 85 or 90, right? So this is the way human nature is. It's the way the world works. Of course, we all understand this. But suffice it to say that the lending nowadays is not very out of hand. There are, of course, a few crazy examples here and there, but by and large, it's fairly sound. And that is why, even though we are way past the point of fundamentals in the high-flying cyclical markets, not in the linear markets, those are not at all past the point of fundamentals, and we've talked about that. Remember, three types of markets: cyclical, linear, and hybrid. We like the linear markets in which to invest. And those markets are very sound from virtually every metric that we talk about or you can find at jasonhartman.com. Very sound. So we'll talk more about this on upcoming episodes, of course, but I just wanted to point it out a little bit. I got a couple of book recommendations for you, a couple of books I have found to be very interesting lately. One is 400 Things Cops Know. It's basically a veteran patrolman who has, you know, cops have a hard job. I tell you, that is a really tough job. I would not want their job. But, and, you know, I knew that before diving into this book. But boy, afterwards, wow. And some of the stuff they know, it just blows my mind. Another one, which is not a new book, but very interesting and very good, is the book After America by Mark Steyn. After America by Mark Steyn, and that's Steyn. I really recommend you get that on Audible and listen to the audio version, because he's so funny and snarky sense of humor. And, you know, it probably comes out on the written pages, but in audio format, it's just really interesting. So there's a couple of them. I got a lot more. And of course, you know, we've had a lot of these famous authors on the show over the years. Okay, before we get to our guest, some housekeeping. jasonhartman.com/contest for the new Amazon Echo contest. Your odds are very good, I'm telling you. Be sure to enter jasonhartman.com/contest. Of course, we've got the Venture Alliance Mastermind coming up in Palm Springs, California. Beautiful place. That'll be in October. Check out Venture Alliance Mastermind for details on that. And I want to say a warm welcome to our newest member, Sepan, one of our clients who's actually been on the podcast before. It's great to have you join Venture Alliance with a full annual membership, and we'll look forward to seeing you in Palm Springs. And what else? Well, of course, meet the Masters of Income Property. We've confirmed John Burns with John Burns Real Estate Consulting as a speaker. We've got some other very famous, well-known speakers we're working on, but we can't quite announce them yet because it's not formalized. But you will know their names, and I know you'll enjoy their talks and their material. This is in La Jolla, California in January. jasonhartman.com/events. jasonhartman.com/events. Early bird pricing still in effect, and tickets are selling quick. So get your tickets before the next price increase on that as we get closer to the event. Let's get to our guest, Nick Giambruno, and talk about the pension crisis, the inflationary pressures it creates, which are great for real estate investors. Let's talk a little bit about the fiat money of cryptocurrency and a whole lot more. Here we go. It's my pleasure to welcome back a returning guest, and that is Mr. Nick Giambruno with Casey Research. Nick, welcome. How are you?
Hey, Jason. Great to be with you again.
Tell us where you're located today.
Well, I've been running around a lot in South America lately, but right now I'm in Medellin, Colombia.
Good stuff. So you don't say Medellin, huh? Medellin.
Oh, it's,
it seems like the proper
locals,
way.
The locals say Medellin, but you can call it Medellin too.
Good stuff. So you haven't been kidnapped yet, I'm taking it. The kidnapping is way down in Colombia, fortunately, so that's good, right?
Oh, yeah. It's actually much safer than a lot of people might believe. Yes, the violent crime is down. And, you know, really, if you, you know, follow common sense, it's no more dangerous than any other large city. And in fact, it's quite a beautiful place and very inexpensive. Beautiful weather year round. It's a nice contrarian lifestyle opportunity, in short.
Uh-huh, good stuff. So now, why do you say contrarian lifestyle? What do you mean by that?
Oh, yeah. So let me explain. What I mean by that is that it's not what people, the average person, believes it to be. The average person believes it's like that show on Netflix, Narcos, or it's Pablo Escobar's drug lords battling it out on the streets. And yeah, that might have been true 30 years ago, but it's a completely transformed city and a completely transformed country. It has a very high standard of living and a very low cost, and I'm a huge fan of the place.
Good stuff. Well, what is occupying your time with research and writing with KC Research nowadays? What are you covering?
Oh, I'm covering a lot of different things, but in terms of the economic and financial situation in the U.S., I've been looking a lot at this pension crisis that's been long been a crisis, but it seems that it's finally reaching a tipping point.
What is reaching a tipping point?
Well, you see, you have all of these public sector employees have pensions, basically, and it's interesting because pensions are, it's simply you just get a paycheck each month after you retire from your employer. In this case, it would be local governments, state governments, federal government in the U.S. But pensions, as I'm talking about here, have basically disappeared from the private sector. It's you know, I think less than 4% of private sector companies even offer pensions. Most get these 401ks, which in for many people is nowhere near as good as getting a promised monthly check that's basically equivalent to your monthly salary. So This is long been gone from the private sector, but nonetheless, public sector government employees still get this quite a generous perk. And so what's happened is that they have pension funds to pay out these pension benefits, and the liabilities have been, you know, these public pensions can also use certain types of accounting that private sector pensions can't legally get away with. I mean, it would be fraud in the private sector, but since it's in the public sector, it magically becomes legal and okay. And what I'm talking about here is each fund has an assumed rate of return. And this is, you know, what this pension fund thinks it's going to make on its investments. It's an assumed rate of return. So these public sector pensions choose ridiculously high assumed rates of return. And what this does is it has the effect of shrinking the liabilities because those future liabilities are discounted at this assumed rate of return. Larger rate of assumed rate of return, the smaller your current liabilities. So these public pensions have used inflated assumptions to artificially shrink their liabilities for many years. But
why are we not surprised?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So do you think the government, especially at the federal level, will just bail all of these out? We know there are pension problems in obviously California, Illinois. You know, every liberal state is always the most messed up of all of them. But when the economies are so big and there's so much momentum, and it just takes a long time for the results of this irresponsible behavior to show up in any real way. And then, of course, they can manipulate, kick the can down the road. Ultimately, yes, there's a problem and someone's going to have to come to the table. But will it just be the federal government doing a bailout and, you know, printing more fake fiat money to do so? So they get their pension in nominal dollars, but in real dollars, it's worth a lot less.
Oh, I think that's exactly the case. I mean, this is, I can't imagine a situation where it's politically acceptable for the federal or the government in general to let to not honor their promises to their own employees when they can simply print money. So I think that is what the most likely situation is going to be, that the federal government through the Federal Reserve will just simply paper this over. But what they'll be doing is trading like a local debt crisis for a federal currency crisis that's going to be terrible for the dollar. We're talking about trillions of dollars. I think the latest estimate is there's a $5 trillion shortfall just in these pensions across the country. So, and that'll obviously get worse.
Let's just make sure people heard that number.
Yeah.
You're saying it's a 5 trillion with a T?
Yes.
Okay, and when does that show? I mean, it shows sort of consecutively in various years, but like, the question is, when do the chickens come home to roost here on this?
Well, the chickens are coming home to roost quite literally in a number of these places. What will happen is that there will be so many liabilities for these funds that, you know, they're going to have to pay out to the current retirees, that they're going to, you know, run out of assets. And they've, like I mentioned before, they've artificially shrunk these liabilities using these, totally unrealistic assumptions. So it's starting to happen, and you're seeing the funded ratios, which is how much assets a pension plan has versus its liabilities, going way down, because they're having to pay out a lot of money to these current and growing amount of pensioners and retirees, and there's not enough money coming in. And that's also why you see taxes going way up in the jurisdictions that have pension problems, most notably in Illinois. Property taxes are always most likely going to be the first thing that go up in any jurisdiction that has a pension problem, because it's so simple.
Yeah, why is the property tax the sort of the simple one? Why is it not sales tax or a tax at the state level on income? Why property tax?
Because you can ratchet it up by a couple of basis points or percentages, a small amount, and it's not as noticeable at first as sales tax. You're constantly reminded of it, and it's maybe at first a little more low key way to squeeze people than just an outright increase in a sales tax or the income tax. But we've seen this in not just in the U.S., in Greece in particular. Property taxes have multiplied. I don't have the number off of my head exactly at the moment, but they've gone up. They've multiplied, I think, like at least 3 times in the past couple of years because of their financial situation. And I think you'll see the same thing in any jurisdiction. Taxes are going to go up, but in particular property taxes, because these are generally property owners are wealthier and they have more to squeeze. So I think you're going to see that.
Those big evil property owners. But what they never realize, you know, especially the political left, is that everything in the world is a pass-through entity. And so all that does is increase rents. So, for example, if you look at a place like Texas with no state income tax, generally speaking, I mean, I know it's a little more complicated than that, but basically no state income tax, and the property taxes are very high. But guess what, folks? The rents are higher as a proportion to value. And in some of the Chicagoland areas where we've sold properties, as well as Texas, is the same thing. The rent-to-value ratios are fantastic. So there's always this compensating factor, and it always hurts the little guy. They think they're hurting the big guy, but all the big guy does is pass it through to the little guy. So, you know, raise corporate tax, and then the corporations raise the price of all their goods and services, and who buys those? The little guy. Duh. Economics 101, right? But you know, you can't get a liberal to understand this stuff. It's just mind-boggling how they're so myopic. Try telling this to Bernie Sanders. It just won't work. So it's crazy. Okay, so this pension problem is coming home to roost, and you think it'll basically result in a federal bailout. I mean, that may be spotty, by the way. I mean, are the cities and municipalities going to default? You say no, it sounds like, right?
Well, some of them, you know, it'll be tricky for them to go bankrupt. So they're going to have to find a way somehow, and you know, they can't print their own money, and they're basically way past the point of diminishing returns of trying to squeeze the taxpayers. And in certain jurisdictions, their state constitutions forbid them from reducing these extravagant pension benefits that these politicians and these state employees have promised themselves. So I really don't see any other way than a federal bailout at some point. I mean, they might, it might take a crisis. It will take a crisis to get to that point, but these pension plans are so insolvent and so underfunded that in the next stock market downturn, it's very likely a lot of these things will just simply go bust. And that will be when the chickens come home to roost, I think, is when the next market, even just a cyclical recession, which the U.S. is overdue for, these pension plans are already in a dismal situation at the height of an enormous stock market bubble and bond market bubble. I mean, what happens when things, you know, there's a slightest downturn? A lot of these pension plans are going to go bust.
Yeah, wow, that's amazing. And that will ultimately result, as it always does, in inflationary pressures. So speaking of bubbles, would it be safe to say that there is a bubble in cryptocurrencies? I mean, Bitcoin, Ethereum, these things have, this is like a crazy tulip bubble of speculators, if you ask me. I don't know. You probably differ, because I have a feeling you're a fan. And just let me state where I'm coming from here, Nick. I, you know, stated it on the show many times over the years, but sure. I want to make it clear. I would love to be wrong about this, what I'm about to say. Okay. Mm-hmm. I would love to be wrong. I just don't think I'm going to be wrong. The old saying, never bet against the Fed. The most powerful forces the human race has ever known are governments and central banks. I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm just saying it is a thing. And cryptocurrencies, and gold and precious metals too, you know, are basically competition for a major product of governments and central banks, which is fiat currency. And I hate fiat currency. Okay. So that's why I say I'd love to be wrong about this, but I'm not a speculator on any of these cryptocurrencies, because I just think the governments and the central banks around the world are going to squash them whenever they want. They're going to make them illegal. China just shut down the exchanges for Bitcoin, I think it was, because, you know, of course, they always do this under the guise of they got to protect us little people, right? But it's always an ulterior motive. So I just wouldn't bet against the Fed. I think that's a pretty risky proposition. You probably disagree with me.
Well, I agree with you. I think this isn't a black and white argument. I think, yes, there is clearly a bubble going on in this space. I mean, you have all sorts of ridiculous. I mean, I think Paris Hilton just came out with her new cryptocurrency that she's like sponsoring. So, I mean, if that's not a sign of a bubble, you know, I don't know what is. But anyways, that doesn't mean that there is, in my opinion, that there, this isn't a sort of, I think it is a revolutionary technology, this blockchain technology. And I'll give you an example of why I think it'll be very difficult to shut down. You might remember back in the early days of file sharing, there was something called Napster, where everybody would share songs on Napster. It was a centralized way to share music. It was very illegal.
Yeah, I remember Napster. Yeah. The two, by the way, I don't know if this is still true, but it was true a few years ago. The two most downloaded software programs in the history of the world are both from Estonia, Napster and Skype. Or maybe it was Kazaa. Sorry, it wasn't Napster. It was Kazaa, I believe. Another music file sharing thing. But okay, so what about Napster? So what? I mean, it's decentralized. That's the point you're making, right?
No, I'm making the opposite point. Napster was centralized. All the government had to do was send its agents, and boom, Napster was shut down. It was quite easy to shut it down. Well, what came after Napster? It was something called BitTorrent. And this is a decentralized way to share files. So basically, you can download a movie that just came out in your local movie theater in DVD quality from little bits of pieces from thousands of people all around the world. And this is what's known as BitTorrent. It's a decentralized way to share files. And this has been around for, I've seen it around, it's been around for almost 15 years, maybe more than 15 years. And that's despite the U.S. government's best efforts to shut it down, because it's not possible to shut this down because it's decentralized. They would essentially have to shut down the internet to shut it down. It's just, there are millions of users of BitTorrent all around the world, and you can't simultaneously take all these people offline. It's just not practical.
So I would argue that, and I've used the example, cocaine is a good example, right? You know, it's a commodity, right? But it's illegal to trade in cocaine, thankfully. I think it's a terrible drug. I do not endorse it by any standard. And you're in Colombia, which is also quite interesting. So, yeah. So we'll use cocaine's a perfect example, okay? It's illegal to trade in cocaine. Now, granted, some people do trade in cocaine. And some people use BitTorrent. But it, in relation to the population of the world, and being able to use BitTorrent or trade in gold or cocaine or anything else in any real, meaningful, widespread way, man, I just don't have a lot of faith in it. And I'd love to be wrong, you know, and I think the technology, you know, the other thing about the cryptocurrencies is we got to differentiate the concept and the technology from the specific coin. So they say, well, the dollar's not backed by anything. How many times have we all heard that? Well, that's BS, first of all, because it's backed by aircraft carriers and fighter jets and all kinds of missiles and things, right? We know these fake wars are likely to prop up the dollar. And by the way, your neighbor there, Venezuela, okay, just said it was going to move away from the dollar and just refuse to trade in the reserve currency of the world. Well, I guess an invasion's probably coming. You know, we're gonna have to do a regime change again and do a little nation building. So everybody's playing our game. You know, it's not right, but it's the way the world is, unfortunately. So the dollar doesn't have a limited supply, and that's the problem. Bitcoin has a limited supply, but the number of the variety of other cryptocurrencies, there's no limit. There's Ethereum, there's Paris Hilton coin, there used to be Kanye coin, there's Dogecoin, there's Litecoin, there's a whole bunch of these. And, you know, when there's going to be a blockchain crypto type technology and currency, I think, unfortunately, it's going to be first a you know, maybe a U.S. currency, but then a global currency. And that's like checkmate on the entire planet when you have a global fiat currency controlled by, you know, the U.N. or some other corrupt organization like that.
Oh, yes. I completely agree with your fears and most of your assessment. Let me just explain what I was meant earlier. I don't know if Bitcoin or any of these cryptocurrencies are going to survive in the long run. All the points you made are completely valid. There's no barrier to entry. Anybody could make one. You could make Jason coin if you wanted to. I could make Nick coin. Yeah. You know,
we should make Jason coin, and I will inflate the hell out of it because that will enrich me and impoverish my coin users. I'll be like Janet Yellen and Alan Greenspan, yeah, and Ben Bernanke, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's no barrier to entry. I just find fascinating the underlying technology, which is this decentralized trust, which is what the blockchain is. And I think there's a lot of different applications for it. And who knows, you know, Bitcoin might not be the one. It might be a different one. But it's just the fact that we can have this kind of setup, this kind of finance. It can be beyond finance. And it's all decentralized. So I think that's a very good thing. And I think it's very hard to stop that. Yes, they could say, oh, Bitcoin is illegal. Cryptocurrencies are illegal. It's only terrorists use these things. Yeah, they could, you know, clamp down on it a lot. But it would, you know, I don't think that even that would totally destroy it. It's just looks like the cat's out of the bag with regard to these decentralized technologies. But yeah, I don't know which one is going to be in the long run. But I do like that. I do like the fact that these things are decentralized and they move power away from the centralized government down to the individual, which I think is a very healthy thing. But to go to your other...
I agree completely. I think it's very healthy.
But to go to your other concern, and I share this concern. I mean, you know, we see governments trying to get rid of cash and push people into these digital bank accounts and so forth. So we have the, you know, the war on cash, which I'm sure you're very familiar with.
Oh yeah.
So this
profiled it before. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is a very real fear and a legitimate fear that governments might try to piggyback off of this technology for their own nefarious purposes. However, I don't know how successful they will be because maybe they could. I'm not saying they can't, but the way these cryptocurrencies and this blockchain works is it's all done voluntarily by people around the world running these things, and that's what makes them decentralized. They're so decentralized. There's tens of thousands of different Bitcoin nodes and miners around the world, maybe more. And they're not doing this because you know the government's forcing them. They're doing it voluntarily. So if the government were to come out with their own cryptocurrency, which is entirely possible, I don't see how they could make it as resilient and as decentralized as the non-state crypto. You know what I'm saying? The non-state cryptocurrencies. So we'll see. But that's definitely a bad thing, and we should be on a lookout for that. And I know the IMF. And the Federal Reserve and all these central banks, they're looking into this stuff. They are, and we should be on alert of it.
Yeah, definitely. Very, very good point. Talk to us a little bit about the geopolitical situation. And, you know, the one word we have never mentioned through this interview, which maybe we should have when you talked about the pensions and really everything, is the word of the year, and that is Trump. So, you know, I mean, where does he come in on the pension crisis and you know, while geopolitics, let's dive into that one first. But I mean, there's obviously, we've had a regime change in the U.S., and it's a pretty significant one, I'd say. I'm not sure he can get much done. The media hates his guts, obviously, and I think he's reckless. But there's some things I like about him, some things I hate about him. So, you know, like any president, I guess. But
yeah. Well, going back to what you're saying about the dollar, Trump's Treasury Secretary just yesterday threatened to kick China, the largest trading partner of the U.S.,
out of
the dollar.
Yeah. Saw it.
So if they're not, if they don't sufficiently comply with the sanctions on North Korea, so I think that's the big issue of the day, is North Korea. But I think the larger effect on us as investors is that I think North Korea is going. It's think of it like North Korea is lighting the fuse on a trade war between the U.S. and China, and I think that is coming. Trump did something last month which is widely regarded as the first shot in a trade war. He used a very little known law that unilaterally allows the president to investigate and punish foreign countries for what they perceive to be unfair trade practices. Now, when there's usually a trade dispute among members of the WTO, of which China and the U.S. are, usually those disputes are taken to the WTO and it's mediated in a multilateral forum. So with Trump doing this outside of that and unilaterally, it's looked at as a very aggressive move from the Chinese against the Chinese, and this is no surprise. We all know what Trump's rhetoric towards China has been. So that I think is coming, and I think North Korea is acting as an accelerant to that because it's so immediate. And Trump is looking for ways to tighten the screws on North Korea. He's going to look to China, and he's going to pressure China on trade, which is something he wanted to do anyways. So I think that's coming, and that's going to be a very big deal.
What does it mean to the typical listener out there?
It means there's going to if this trade war with China proceeds as it seems to be, it's going to mean a lot of turmoil in the stock market, the bond market. China holds a lot of treasuries, and you know, Chinese officials are not shy about saying they would dump those treasuries if there was some sort of trade war with the U.S. I think if this does proceed, just the average person is going to be looking at higher prices in the store,
so
higher
that's
consumer
inflation.
Price.
Predicted
it's inflationary.
That.
Yeah, so not good. It's not good, no matter how you.
Yeah, get. Yeah. So it's good if you're investing for inflation, though. If you're investing the
yes.
right way, then you know, inflation makes the people in the know a lot richer, obviously, and most people it hurts them, unfortunately. I just get the feeling that it's like every president, no matter what they say or what their own position is, once they get into the Oval Office, they just, for whatever reason, whatever pressures they endure, whatever secret society really runs the world, you know, I don't know where to go with it, but they all just have to support the military-industrial complex, don't they?
Yeah, it is bizarre, and I'll give you what I think is this.
It really is bizarre, yeah, go ahead.
I'll give you what I think is the starkest example of this, is when Trump was campaigning, he would put on his Twitter some very colorful language, to say the least, about Saudi Arabia and how oh, they can't bribe me with their money and how terrible they are. And then a few months later, using very aggressive language to describe nothing that any other president or any other high official in the U.S. government has ever even come close to using. And then a few months later, he goes and does the sword dance and bows before the Saudi king. So what is going on
just
here?
Like Obama did.
Yeah, what is going on here? I mean, obviously it has something to do, and it goes back to the dollar. I think in a large part the oil markets help backstop the dollar, and well, who's one of the largest oil exporters? And it's Saudi Arabia. So this goes also to the geopolitical situation with China. One thing China has been intent on doing and has tried to do so far unsuccessfully is to get Saudi Arabia to accept Chinese renminbi in exchange for their oil that they import from them. That would be a game changer, because that would totally affect the U.S. dollar and treasury market, because that money is not being, China is not needing to buy dollars to buy oil from Saudi Arabia. They can just use their own currency. They already have that arrangement with a number of countries, including Russia, Iran, and I think Angola, a number of other oil exporting countries. But Saudi Arabia is the big one. And if they can twist the Saudis' arm enough that they do it, that will be not only a geopolitical earthquake, but a financial earthquake.
Yeah, we live in interesting times, don't we? Do you think, though, just your overall take on things? I mean, is it was it good news for the economy or the country that Trump won, or was it bad news?
I liked some of the things he said, and I'll say, his tax reform. I would love it if he would kill that.
Oh my God, that will kill it. That will be awesome. Like, if corporate taxes drop that much, do you know how much money is going to flow back onshore if that happens, and how the economy is just going to boom?
And we were talking a little bit before the show about this worldwide taxation of U.S. citizens. Trump's, again, this is just in his proposal, he would go to a territorial system. He would do away with the worldwide system. And that is a big, big deal for people who live and work abroad, or just businesses that have international operations. So, I mean, who knows if it's actually going to get through, but that would be a big deal. So there were some things that I did like that.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, Nick, just wrap it up. Give out your website. Where can people find you and your great writings? And just wrap it up with any closing thoughts.
Oh, sure. There's a lot more of the topics that we discussed at internationalman.com. And that's the best place you can go to find all that.
Nick Giambruno, KC Research. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own. And if you require specific legal or tax advice, or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.